And Dr. Leslie Bouch joined the faculty at Florida State University College of Medicine in 2003 as professor of health policy and the director of the Center for Medicine and Public Health. He currently chairs the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Social Medicine. But before he went over to the dark side in academia, he actually spent useful years as a career in public health practice at the highest levels as the commissioner of Oklahoma State Health Department, as the assistant state health officer in the Florida Department of Health, and the medical director in Broward County, Florida. But I'm going off script because we know Dr. Bouch best as the public health system guy. His expertise in public health systems and in quality improvement really gives him that national leadership pedestal that I'm in awe with. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Bouch.
So I'm going to have to agree with Bernie. These introductions are over the top and set way too high expectations for us to deliver. So my hope today is to try and describe the primary care capacity project in a systems context. So give you the perspective of that project and how it builds systems. And the importance of systems, I think you've already had alluded to by Ayana and Bernie, have to do with the sustainability and resiliency. So the first thing I want to do is give a shout out to the staff at Louisiana Public Health Institute. And so we're talking about Joe Kimbrell, we're talking about Eric Baumgartner, Tiffany Netters, Jamie Clancy, Barry Black, who have produced 98.3%, very narrow confidence interval, of the material I'm about to present. So first of all, I have no disclosures. It's not that I don't have many conflicts of interest, it's just that we don't have time for me to disclose all of them. None of them are financial, however, so I have a lot of angst and guilt, but that's my upbringing and no point in actually disclosing all of those. So here we go. And just to, again, to build on just the most basic parts of this project, you know, the purpose, I think Ayana touched on this. We're dealing with a part of the southeastern United States that's been heavily impacted over the years by many adverse events, and then superimposed upon that conditions of chronic poverty and behavioral health issues that never get addressed. And when you combine that with trauma from meteorological events or man-made events, it creates a huge depth of unmet need. And so where do you begin to do that? You address it at the foundation. And I love the slide that Ayana, the pyramid that she showed you earlier. So this project is focused on expanding that integrated, high-quality, sustainable, community-based primary care system within those communities impacted adversely by the oil spill. And so that's easy to say, but how do you do that? You can improve access to care. There's got to be high-quality care, and that's not always the case in community-based facilities that are very spottily supported by funding streams. And they need to become more efficient, and that sustainability of business operations is really, really important. Emphasizing evidence-based practices, and some of those you just heard discussed by Bernie just a moment ago, and integration of services so that someone who's coming there for primary care is also able to receive behavioral health services, environmental and occupational health services, and access other types of services that they might indeed need. So what are some of the objectives? There are a couple of main streams here that are being built upon. So first is that community health clinic capacity. And again, whether we're talking about quality and effectiveness, so that would be evidence-based practices. PCMH is patient-centered medical home, an evidence-based industry standard for how we approach individuals and their families. Improve the business operational capability, capacity, sustainability. And again, that's key. And I want to piggyback on what Ayana said. The sustainability here is really, I think, in many ways tenuous because we talked about what a high-need area this is. This is also if you did a map of the U.S. and you did, you know, the stroke belt or the hypertension belt or sexually transmitted infection belt, it would look the same. And the same thing for poverty levels. And then you also look at the states that failed to actually expand Medicaid as part of the Affordable Care Act. It's all the same map. In fact, I only have one map, and they are all superimposed. But I'm not going to show you that map. So it's critical then that the business processes really work well, that these places be, you know, each of these community health centers and FQHC lookalikes be as efficient as it possibly can be. There's also the potential to have regional care collaboratives, sort of learning communities, if you will, of these community health centers to address their common needs, learn together, improve their communications, and to really have networking among them. So this not only improves sustainability, but also resilience, because if they're ready for a disaster, then the community is able to respond, because they are, in many places, a linchpin of their communities. So what the earliest part of this project, which I'll talk a bit more about, took a very untraditional kind of approach. It didn't just say, here's money for primary care capacity. It focused on supporting and sustaining things like a community health assessment, a planning process, and then implementation of that process. So the idea that there were to be a regional assessment of community health, and then beginning to make a prioritization exercise around what those communities should address and then the order in which they should develop them. Having health strategies and objectives and actually measuring and seeing where you are at each of those mileposts. And it not being simply an activity that was undertaken by the community health center, but also with local and state partners like public health, like with the primary care state agency and so on. And about developing partnerships and managing and sustaining those partnerships. So this is one way to think about how that might look in a more sort of graphic look, and you have the project itself in the center. And all of those things, or I should say most of them, are around systems kinds of thinking, about a learning community, about engaging that community, about leveraging partnerships, about systems investments. CCHY is community-centered health home, which I'll talk a little bit about. HIE is health information exchange, as we move that electronic health records a bit forward. And the clinic capacity building and technical assistance in QI are the tools then that LPHI has used to be successful in this project. So just to put these things in a couple of waves, there's really been two phases of this project, and the first phase really rolled out very quickly, and I'll describe it to you, which really paid attention to focusing on building the capacity within the clinics themselves. Phase two, which we're very much in the middle of right now, is continuing to support activities within the community health centers and FQHCs, but also paying attention to systems kinds of efforts and activities that tie those community health centers together. And again, this is one of the keys to that sustainability mechanism. And then a relatively new aspect of this that's really taking place right now and moving forward is the community-centered health home. So this is one way of looking at how that first cycle or first phase looked. And again, there are a lot of inputs here. So there's a rapid community assessment piece that I'll mention here in a minute. Also, the health, each of the CHCs, FQHCs, had their own ideas of what might be important that they needed to have with to bolster their capacity. And then there's a whole set of clinic gold standards. And so, you know, what do high-performing community health centers or primary care centers have in common? And those come from organizations like, again, the National Committee on Quality Assurance and their patient-centered health homes, a whole list of criteria. And then finally, there are clinic assessments, very in-depth, rigorous kind of intense look at the clinics themselves. So this phase one, you know, without looking too much at the what's here, it was meant to get the dollars out relatively quickly, and it was about a third of the dollars available, so up to about $10 million. So the clinic assessments, as I mentioned before, were based on the NCQA model, and they required the LPHI staff to actually go on site to visit each of the community health centers, and we're talking about a 3-hour face-to-face, 128 questions about various elements of their capacity. Very evidence-based, thoughtful approach. And the process for doing those assessments, I don't really want to go over this to say, but it was a very process-driven, predictable model, so that everyone involved knew precisely what to expect. There was a protocol. There were guarantees of confidentiality. You're coming to look at my clinic, and I don't want this information shared with anyone else. We're here about improving your operations. And so everyone pretty much issued an invitation, agreed to participate in it. And there was almost immediate feedback that just going over that process is very important. And, I just did a presentation before I came here on public health agency accreditation. And you see those same kind of outcomes in an accreditation process. Is just getting ready and going through those assessment processes are beneficial all by themselves. So some of the things that came out of the assessment were identified, more information and need around this patient-centered medical home, but also the integration of behavioral health and environmental and occupational medicine. And what a great thing when you have partners and collaborators in your overall GRHOP project who are addressing those very same things. And so to really make this work well, there had to be integration across the entire enterprise, and I think we have it. But then you get down to some of the mundane things that you need just to be viable. It's really nice to have electricity when you're operating. Almost every place I know needs lights to be able to open the doors. And so, in the Gulf region, not having a generator really places you at a huge disadvantage in order to be able to serve needy populations. Electronic medical records are no longer an optional kind of thing that only cutting-edge practices have. Everyone's got to have them in order to share information, to bill, to do all of those kinds of things. And clearly the staffing in some of the facilities was certainly not sufficiently able to address all the health needs in those communities and all the skills needed to do that as well. I mentioned there were also rapid community assessments, and again, this is a new kind of element to this, so that it's really not only just what are the medical needs in that community, in that particular clinic, but what does the community see as its key health issues? Because as you can imagine, and I know all of you as public health people realize, those things don't necessarily always turn out to be the same, and if you did a Venn diagram, sometimes that overlap is modest. And so they base this assessment on a number of, again, evidence-based models, things like MAP, Mobilizing for Action through Planning and Partnership, principles of community-based participatory research, qualitative research methods, and a community toolbox that NACHO has available and other people use very widely. And then this was vetted with all the collaborators within GRHOP. So, and there was a community meeting in each of the areas that we're talking about, the 11 community health centers, and there was a consensus process to identify and prioritize those needs. So I'm not going to go over this slide other than to give you a sense of again, in each of the 11 sites, although that adds up to 12, I see, there were activities going on with, again, getting participants there, getting the partners there. And there were some, again, common needs for community information, more providers, behavioral health, environmental, occupational health, transportation, oral health, not surprising things that are needed in these underserved communities, but they've been documented now. And so there was also processes mentioned that the clinical operators, themselves could begin to ask for items they thought they needed. And there was a process in place to reconcile those requests with what they had just learned from the community health assessment and from the clinic assessment itself. And so when those things lined up, then that was a great way to move forward. But if they didn't line up well, there needed to be a little bit of negotiation and discussion about how to help those things really work together in a mutually reinforceable way. So there are a lot of steps to contracting. I'm not going over those, but I just want to point out the ones that I've highlighted in red here for a moment. And that there was a process in place when LPHI went forward to not only do their work, but to make sure this information was available to all the other GR partners, because the work they were doing was the foundation in that pyramid and affected their work as well. And then there would be negotiations, you know, for how to align those findings and the requests, and then those recommendations would go as a document or series of documents back to the community health center. And some of this was an iterative process till there was a basis for agreement. So things looked a little bit different in Louisiana than they did in the other three states that are involved in the project. Normally you'd put up a slide here that names all the Louisiana communities involved. I refuse to do that because I can't pronounce any parish in Louisiana correctly. So I'm not going to embarrass myself in a more public way than I am now. But there were also some requirements in Louisiana because they had received so much funding that was tailored and targeted in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, that emphasis was placed on two areas in the settlement, so-called predetermined areas, that received the first round of funding. And so those are around fishermen communities that in a couple of places in Louisiana. A couple principles here around phase one and phase two. And again, I want you to think about phase one and phase two. Phase one being more about, again, funding capacity, and phase two being more about how you go from capacity to system. And, you know, there's some overlap there in those two concepts. But, in the first round, again, we're tailored more towards the community health centers and FQHC lookalikes. There was no performance history. So all that information that was gathered began to build some of that baseline information. But then there's the opportunity to actually establish baseline performance. And there wasn't, you know, much basis for community-based interaction there between the community health center and the community they were serving. So in the rounds that followed, which we're in the midst of right now, so it was really about systems change and investing in that system change. And pushing those community health centers and facilitating that transformance to become involved in higher functioning in that primary care assets access and becoming closer partners within those communities. So Affordable Care Act, I think I've covered the things about it I wanted to say before, but remember, the Affordable Care Act has promoted a lot more preventive services to be available, without deductible, making access a lot better for those people who are getting able to buy products through the exchanges and so on. But in addition, it also gave additional funding to community health centers. So, you know, that's a good thing. You know, the downside I mentioned was the lack of Medicaid expansion in the very states where I would argue it's most needed. So another way to look at that, again, going from sort of the individual clinic to the sort of systems approach. So one example might be managing your clinic population, which would be an upgrade for most of the community health centers serving the Gulf region, but to be able to move from that to be thinking about population metrics in your community. So be able to looking at, not going from an EMR system to one that complies with and meets meaningful use standards in stage two and three, health information exchanges, and so on. So the phase two part really moved from that sort of focal piece then to the quality programs, providing incentives to those to those community health centers to expand that quality, but then also began to look at networking and shared kinds of things. And I mentioned the regional care collaboratives as well. So let's couple of examples for here in, Louisiana. So it looks at shared infrastructure and community level quality. So the 504 Health Net is responsible for more shared services, so shared purchasing and shared other kinds of activities. And a second project is something called PATH, which is an acronym I'm afraid I do not know the actual words for, but that's again around health information exchange and care coordination for that larger area. So, and similarly, the same thing in the other Gulf states. And the idea, again, to be continuing to support the health departments, the community health centers, but also to build some of that networking capacity and so on. And we'll come to the CCHA in just a minute. So this is a newer concept, and the last sort of aspect of the work that they're doing in Phase 2, community-centered health home, and it's a demonstration project. And this is one of the things that's being rolled out now. Let me tell you just a couple of things about it. I am not an expert, but we have experts in the room, so this is good. So this is a concept that's been really developed by the Prevention Institute, and they've developed a framework that comes much closer to marrying community with the community health centers that are high performing. So it takes their work from just the four corners of the campus, you know, outside, and involves the community, which is really the whole approach that's been taken by LPHI in doing a community assessment and getting all that feedback and input. So a couple of things to think about in this demonstration project. It's about advancing health equity. It's about promoting community resiliency, which is hugely important. It continues to improve capacity, but it goes beyond just a patient-centered health home, medical home, and becomes something where the community health center becomes an effective partner in community prevention and community development in some ways. So some of the basics for this project, it's a two-year demonstration project. Louisiana can have up to two awards, the other states one each, and there's some funding associated with that and some very site-specific kinds of projects tailored to the needs that they have. There is a tremendous amount of technical assistance and expertise that's going to be made available to those sites that are selected. This is kind of what it looks like. You've got a very engaged, informed leadership in those community health centers, a culture that may not be amendable, but perhaps amenable to change. That's a little extra letter there. These are going to be sites that have already shown historic patterns of being involved in community-centered activities. There'll be dedicated staff that participate in this, and, you know, again, some of the infrastructure and systems building, but also the ability to analyze health data at the community level and committing to a much more important partnership development at the community level. So there's a whole host of technical assistance that will be made available. Again, that expertise is national, but also resides within the Louisiana Public Health Institute, which is tremendous. And I will stop 34 seconds ahead of my time. There's not a clarifying question.
Clarifying questions for Dr. Bach. Yes, there is one.
What does the funding mix look like for most of these community health centers? Like, even though Medicaid was expanded, how much portion of patients have Medicaid, portion uninsured?
So that, I'm going to repeat the question and then deny any. So the question was, what does the funding look like for these community health centers, and what does it look like? And that's a fantastic question. So we met as a group this week, and the information that's been coming from the community health centers has been reported back to LPHI, and those very questions are being examined. What are the percentage of your patients that are insured? A low number. What are the percentage that are uninsured, Medicaid, Medicare? And it varies, but there is a group, you know, number. I don't know what that is, but I might ask if any of the LPHI folks want to take a stab at that, or you can deny any knowledge if you wish to.
They have core funding from the Health Services Administration, but that doesn't cover all their costs, so they supplement that with income from, you know, whether it's from mostly Medicaid, but then and private insurance. So they try to collect as much as possible from the insurers. But what reason it varies so much, it depends on how many uninsured are in that particular part of the state or the country, you know. So, and that's pretty significant, and at least in some of the grantees in this GRHOP project.
So that's Joe Kimbrough, who's the executive director of Louisiana Public Health Institute. And again, that's the importance of the expanded Medicaid that we didn't see. And so the HRSA money is not enough to, you know, that's pretty basic level of funding. It's important, and I'm sure that no one wants to give it up. I understand why the GRHOP funding was so crucial to begin to build and supply some of these necessary kinds of things.
Thank you.